What's good, everybody? Pete and Rob here with you. Happy Friday, Robbie. We're talking sleepers today, buddy.
Happy Friday, Pete. Good to be with you. And a lot of talk now. Some guys that could make maybe a little bit of a sneaky difference for some of these postseason teams. So the player I wanted to start out here today with you, Pete, is Kailer Yamamoto of the Edmonton Oilers. I think this one's a no-brainer just when you look at their top six overall.
With sleepers, like you see on our list, which is on NHL.com/fantasy, there are some guys who performed really well in the regular season. Like Yamamoto had, 26 points in 27 games, playing with the leading scorer of the league, Leon Draisaitl. But the thing is, you look at Edmonton's forward group, he's behind not only McDavid and Draisaitl at the top, he's behind Nugent Hopkins. Like, his value is still fairly low, even though he had shades of a breakout this year. So, and that goes for Burakovsky as well. Great career year, almost every category, still under the radar because of an injury he dealt with right before the pause.
And I'll say this too about Yamamoto being a sleeper. I don't know. We don't really know this player yet. It's a very small sample size. We don't know if this is going to be a continuous thing throughout his career. If he comes up in the postseason and plays a lights out performance where he's putting up a point per game, then you can say stamp of approval, fantasy appeal moving forward. We don't know that yet. He could lay an egg. And I guess on the other hand, it wouldn't surprise many people either. Right, Pete?
I think his, special teams are going to be huge in that series between Chicago and Edmonton. But when you look at how good Yamamoto was at even strength, it kind of took Draisaitl to a new level. And I think if Edmonton dominates even strength, and that's, when you look at how bad Chicago's power play was, they're going to need to bounce back in that category. But if Edmonton dominates the even strength, this might not be even be a contest in this series.
I agree wholeheartedly. Now, an interesting name on this article too, and you can find it on NHL.com/fantasy on our homepage there, is Jason Zucker of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Now, Zucker's been a guy that hasn't really been too much of a sleeper throughout his career, but I think he enters the sleeper category now because he's on this Pittsburgh team. And when you look at Pittsburgh, you're really looking at two guys predominantly. And if you're looking at a third guy, his name's Jake Guentzel. So where does Jason Zucker fit in on this offense for you, Pete?
Well, he's right in the thick of it because he was playing his 15 or so games since the trade from Minnesota to Pittsburgh on the line with Crosby. And I think that can hold true here. I love the idea of a Guentzel, Crosby, Zucker line to complement the Malkin-Rust line. So, and then where does Zucker fall in the grand scheme of things in Pittsburgh's offense? Even deeper down the line than like a Yamamoto in the scope of his team, because on Pittsburgh, you got all the skaters, you got Malkin and Crosby, you got Guentzel, you have Rust even. I think that Zucker would even go behind the breakout candidate or the great breakout player Rust in a fantasy pool draft. So that's why he's even sneaky, even more sneaky within the scope of his team.
That's a great point, because Rust is the guy that really did emerge as that quality Pittsburgh forward that's not named Crosby, Malkin, or Guentzel now. So right. It's kind of funny. Even when you look on their back end, you're drafting Letang clearly over a guy like Zucker as well. So when you look at production, and I would say, especially in DFS contests, that's probably a player, Pete, around the 3,500 to 4,200 price range early in contests that you can get as your last forward pick on a roster. If you're not ready to stack up Sidney Crosby and Zucker, just get the standalone exposure by putting Zucker in that lineup. And then there you have it. If the Pens pop off against Carey Price, you're cashing in.
I do think the Penguins offense, the more we dissect this, could really it's a matchup nightmare, honestly, against Montreal. Montreal has decent depth, like we've talked about. I'm curious to see if Zucker can take a big step forward, because you look at his career playoff production for the Minnesota Wild, it's not pretty. Only 4 goals, 4 assists, 8 points in 31 games. That's not very much. So, but the Crosby effect can have a tremendous ripple on his even strength play. And it doesn't even matter if he's on the power play one. He could drop 10 goals in a hurry if the Penguins go 3 rounds or something like that. So, yeah, that's where we're looking at Zucker, why he's under the radar. Despite being a 30-goal scorer one time in his career, I think there are some question marks, and that's why he could be worth the investment late in a fantasy pool draft.
I think back to 2017-18 Stanley Cup championship run by the Washington Capitals, and a player that kind of emerged through the thick of things there was Andre Burakovsky. His career was kind of going downwards at that point, then scores 2 big goals in Game 7 against the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Eastern Conference Final. that's a player now that's with the Avalanche that had a pretty solid fantasy season, Pete, a lot of multi-point games. Do you trust that his value in the postseason will be there on that stacked Colorado team, or maybe now that they're healthy, you have some concerns about Berkey?
When he was playing with McKinnon, I mean, that was like his dream scenario. He could finally reach the ceiling or close to the ceiling. I don't think he's reached the ceiling in the NHL yet, but he got pretty close to it this year for those stretches that he was with McKinnon. If you anticipated being Landeskog, McKinnon, and Rantanen, then Burakovsky's going to be with Kadri and maybe Nemestikov on the second line. I'm curious to see whether it's Kadri or Burakovsky, who is the fifth member on the power play one with the big three and also Kale McCarr. So that remains to be seen. Burakovsky had a career high 11 power play points, which is much better than he's ever had before, but really not too prolific in the grand scheme of things. So that would be the key for Burakovsky to unlock his untapped potential that you, Robbie, I know you're very familiar with this player. And, you know, I have always thought highly of him. So I would be interested to see. I think the power play thing will unlock his ceiling if it happens.
Agree 100%. I mean, with that Avalanche team, you need to be on the top unit to be returning proper fantasy value. Otherwise, every point at even strength is attached to number 29 on that team. So that's the key there. And I think it will be Kadri. I'm sure if they do play, you know, maybe like two games with Berkey there in the round robin and two games with Kadri there, I wouldn't be surprised to see that. But when the postseason starts, these teams are banging bodies. Nazem Kadri's the guy that creates a lane on that power play. Nazem Kadri's the guy that clears the front of the net out so that point shots can get on net. So I do think it's going to be Naz ultimately, but it's not that I wouldn't draft Burakovsky. I would just be a little bit weary. You know, if you're going to expect first power play time right now, I would definitely side with Kadri on that one.
That makes sense. And I believe we have Kadri ranked ahead of Burakovsky in our top 100 or top 100 forwards, top overall rankings for the playoff pools. Yeah, the Avalanche are such a, like, that's a team I feel like whether you get one of their two goalies, Francouz or Grubauer, or maybe tap in, you know, maybe reach for a Kale McCarr or a Nathan McKinnon, or get someone in the middle there in that range, like a sleeper candidate. That is a team that you're really going to want to get at least one player on your roster from because of their ceiling. And Kadri is a guy that, like, brings that physical element and has some extra motivation. We've been talking about it all along. How can we tap into some of these players and think about what they might be thinking? You know what Kadri's thinking, what he had to deal with the past two postseasons. He's going to be disciplined. He's going to be fiery, and he's going to put the puck in the net multiple times for the Avalanche in the first round, I think.
You mentioned two goalies there for the Avalanche. I'm going to go stay in the goalie ballpark here and bring up Robin Lehner. I know that he doesn't fit the prototypical sleeper mold because of his consistent stats now for the past two seasons, but you got to keep in mind, this is a player that is right now behind Marc-Andre Fleury, one of the best postseason goalies of the modern era. So anytime that there's a chance to overthrow a big time number one goalie like Marc-Andre Fleury, it's automatically a sleeper. Think back to the Pittsburgh Penguins when Matt Murray was challenging Marc-Andre Fleury. That was one of the biggest storylines of that postseason. So pay attention to that, I think, fantasy owners heading into this postseason as well.
Yeah, and Leonard is a potential UFA after the season, so he has every bit of extra incentive to try to cut into Marc-Andre Fleury's playing time. Yeah, Leonard's been as good as any goalie. He's only behind Bishop and Kemper over the past 2 years in save percentage. And yeah, this is a guy that has been really productive, really reliable, whether he's been on the Islanders, Blackhawks, or Golden Knights over the past two seasons. So he's been consistent regardless of team situation around him. And he's a guy, I know a lot of people think highly of Leonard and might say, why is he on a sleeper list? But yeah, it's like Georgiev. I mean, if you think, if a lot of people out there think that this guy might not start a game, the fact is he might very well start a game in the round robin and have a chance to boost his case for the actual playoffs when they happen.
Leonard is definitely a sleeper. I just wanted to chime in here and let you guys know. We had Mike McKenna on with Dan Rose and Sean Rourke. He covers the Vegas Golden Knights, former goaltender. I was surprised at his answer when we asked him, is it clear-cut Fleury over Leonard? And he said, obviously, it's Fleury, clear-cut. He's the leader of the team, and I think he's got a long leash. That's what he said. So even if Fleury stumbles a little bit, they're going to give him some leeway. I was surprised to hear that because Leonard's so good behind him. But again, McKenna knows the team better than I, so I'm going to have to take his word on that.
And think about a seven-game series in the first round of the actual postseason. Fleury's getting every game. If that goes the distance, you're starting Fleury in game seven. That would be insane. Even if Fleury has two bad games in game five and game six, they're going back to Fleury in game seven because of his experience. That postseason, he made save after save after save and carried that team for a little while there. And then against Washington, obviously, Fleury wasn't superhuman, and then they ended up losing the series in five. So you know that Fleury has the track record. And I think that's a great point that Bob brought up. I mean, you got to trust someone that has ties to the organization, that has the pulse on it. I love Robin Lehner's stat line. I think he's great, too. I think he's got the mental edge now in his career. But when it comes to actually winning a postseason series with seven games, you're going Marc-Andre Fleury.
That's a very fair point. I think just to look back at what Leonard did last year with the Islanders in the playoffs, he played eight playoff games and had a 936, which is astronomical, really, when you think about it. But and also in that series, remember, against Carolina, it wasn't his fault why they dropped the first two games at home. And then it kind of got into the drama of should they start Thomas Greiss. And the Islanders were kind of dead and gone in that series anyway at that point. But, yeah, I think Leonard definitely makes a case. Don't invest in him as your first goalie. Please don't do that. Take one of the top 10, 15 guys, and then if you have a format where you can invest in a secondary goalie and you want to try to strike gold, that's where you take a chance on Leonard.
When I look at the Rangers this postseason, we're talking about Gorgiev now, It's funny to me to envision that series against Carolina, because if they start Shesterkin in game one, which I would expect that, he gets shelled in game one. Okay, then they turn to Lundqvist probably in game two because he's got the veteran experience. He gets shelled in game two. Then do they turn to Gorgiev in game three, and then he wins the series and they ride him out to the postseason, Pete? Is that kind of the scenario that would make the most sense for Gorgiev?
Yeah, maybe they lose the first two games against the Canes, then win three in a row, and the rest is history. You never know. Things like that happen in the playoffs sometimes. I do think that Gorgiev, with his road productivity, I mean – I think we were looking, he has the third best road winning percentage among goalies with like 10 or 15 games minimum on the road, which is really impressive and bodes well for his chances in this tournament. Remember, against certain teams, like I know Lundqvist has great numbers this season against the Hurricanes, but like Georgiev in different stretches, like they can turn to this guy and then play him three, four nights in a row. He has that type of capability. So that's why it's really intriguing as a sleeper. Sure, Shesterkin, we all love him. We love his fantasy appeal now and moving forward, but he's still very young. He's inexperienced in these type of situations, as Georgiev is, but Georgiev has some sneaky appeal. I don't know what it is about that guy. He's totally overlooked. He was overlooked in the regular season, even when he was outperforming those two other guys at different points.
And going back to the regular season, keep in mind, everyone was clamoring here in New York, trade Georgiev, get value at the trade deadline. They didn't trade him. And this might be the reason why. Yeah. And I think John Davidson there in the front office might be saying, look, we don't trust Lundqvist as much anymore. It's just not the same player. That's the reality. It's not – I'm not a Lundqvist hater. That's the reality. Shesterkin's a rookie. Gorgiev's the guy that's kind of in the middle of the two players in terms of experience. That might be why they kept him.
Yeah, I think it is. And, the Rangers overall as a road team were really impressive. So that's, again, why if you haven't listened to our previous episodes, that's why we're really high on them to maybe win multiple rounds, not only get out of the qualifiers, but potentially even have a case for an upset bid against one of the top teams in the league, whether it's Boston or Tampa Bay or any team like that, Washington. I think the Rangers would stack up regardless of whether it's Georgiev or Shesterkin. And again, there I saw someone, people were commenting on our article and saying in some cases, like, why isn't Shesterkin on this list? Why would you have Georgiev on there? Why isn't Provorov on this list? Like, these sleepers are guys that are going to be available much later. Like, Shesterkin is top 12 at his position in our rankings. Same with Provorov. He's like 14th out of all defensemen. So that's why we're kind of not including those bigger names, those guys that we think so highly of on our sleeper list.
And Oliver Bjorkstrand, I think, is a perfect example of that exact description. He's going to be there later in drafts. People are going to completely forget about the Blue Jackets. And this is a player that led them in points per game this season. I think it was north of 0.70 points per game, something like that. And this is an offense that lost all of their stars last year in the offseason. So when you look at Bjorkstrand's production, it's nothing short of sensational when you think about the talent on that team or the lack thereof. And then on the back end with Seth Jones and a healthy Werenski, I think that Bjorkstrand could really elevate his game in the postseason and say, look, I am a capable top line forward in this league. I can score right up there with some of the star names in the NHL.
No doubt. I think they're actually going to, in order to beat the Maple Leafs, they're going to need a big series from Bjorkstrand, not just stay healthy. They're going to need even more than what they got from him last postseason, which was 5 points in 9 or 10 games as they went to the second round. We all remember that. But yeah, I think guys like Atkinson will go ahead of Bjorkstrand in most drafts. Certainly the two defensemen that you mentioned are top notch and among the best at their position. So yeah, Bjorkstrand is a top notch goal scorer. He's going to have to match up against one of the, you know, probably the Tavares Nylander line. And then the Pierre-Luc Dubois Atkinson line will be matched up against, you know, the top guns for Toronto and Matthews and Marner. So I think that's going to be a huge storyline, the second line scoring. And yeah, not many people realize that he was up there and leading them in points per game. And that's how effective he was in the regular season before that long-term injury.
And while we've been on the pause here, I've had a serious itching to play DFS. I'm not going to lie to you guys. And Bjorkstrand's another one of those players that, you know, would I go on and would I stack up the Blue Jackets offense? No freaking way. But what I would do is I would put Bjorkstrand in there as one of my key plays of the night, knowing that if the Blue Jackets even score 2 or 3 goals against Freddie, which is very likely based on his regular season performance, I can see the Leafs, you know what, winning a lot of those games like 5-3, I think would be a nice. So hit the over in that series too. I'm already thinking about that as well. But I think Bjorkstrand's the prototypical DFS player, high shot volume, good production. And if the Blue Jackets get a couple points, he's definitely going to be in on at least 60% of them.
I'm hearing Robbie mentioning over-unders and series prices are popping in my brain, minus 160 for the Maple Leafs. It just feels strange. You know, we've gone so long without sports. We've gone so long without DFS and gambling. I'm actually getting excited, but, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic because you know that this thing can go sideways at any point. Hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully we stay on track. But just hearing Robbie mention, you know, the over in this game, the under in that game, it's getting me excited.
I know, DFS, three letters that we haven't really talked about in a very long time. But as we get closer to July, I mean, we're going to find out very soon, you know, for hopefully better. But we'll see what happens, you know, as training camps near and the possibility that they could get pushed back. You never know, but we hope for the best on that front.
Speaking of over-unders, Dallas is a team that we were under pretty much all season long when they were playing. Rupe Hintz is a guy in the forward group that has a lot of upside. I mean, I know you were super high on him, Pete, coming into the season. He delivered early on for fantasy owners. For a team like Dallas, though, that doesn't have a lot of firepower or that we're still a little skeptical if they'll ever break through from that scoring slump. They've been in it for 2 seasons straight, by the way. This is not exclusive to last season. I was crunching numbers. They were just as bad at 5-on-5 goals the season before, if you can believe that. So this might be more of a thing for Dallas now, Pete. When you look at Rupe Hintz, do you trust that the Dallas is going to break through and find the scoring and Rupe Hintz is going to return value?
Well, like the Dallas Stars are a type of team that, like, remember when the LA Kings won their 2 Stanley Cup titles? They were near the bottom of the league each season in goals per game. Like those type of teams that play that type of style. Now the Kings, I will say, were much better coached than Dallas is, I think. I think that, like, Daryl Sutter was, you know, a maestro back there. And, of course, you know, we don't know about Rick Bowness. We don't know if it's the best fit possible. It might not be. But regardless, I think Dallas can up its game, up the ante in the playoffs, get some key goals from Hintz. Hintz produced 8 points in 13 playoff games last year, so you know he could do that. He brings the speed element. He was tied for their second-best goal scorer this year despite missing about 10 games. So, yeah, even though there were bumps in the road, the offense was horrible at different points. Like, Hintz still almost scored 20 goals, which is really impressive. So And like, he's right in that same range. You can either take Hintz, who's more of a wild card, or you could take Bobby's guy, Gurianov, who scored 20 goals and maybe even still has a higher ceiling. So that's what you're choosing between for Dallas in the late rounds.
And not to throw out a shoddy stat here, but what is 20 goals on that Dallas team compared to like a high octane offense like Edmonton or like Washington, right? Or like Toronto? That's probably closer to around 25 to 30 goals. So that's big time in the NHL if you can produce at that clip, and especially on a team like Dallas where you mentioned the scoring is way down.
Yeah, it means everything to a team like Dallas. I mean, other teams might take a 20 goal scorer for granted, but if a guy can get that done for Dallas, it honestly might be the difference between them in a normal season, like making or missing the playoffs, because of how structured they are on the back end. They win low scoring games, so a goal here, a goal there makes all the difference in the world for a team like Dallas.
So when we look at Edmonton that can score offensively, turning to their back end, two goalies, Mike Smith, Mikko Koskinen, they both had flashes of brilliance this season in fantasy, and then they would go through bad stretches as well. The definition of inconsistency. For me, I'd probably side with Mike Smith, and it just kind of pains me a little bit to say that. The only reason I'm saying that is because of the veteran experience, the postseason experience. I think Koskinen's got a little bit more upside, a little bit more juice to make a big save. But when you look at the Edmonton Oilers, I think if you're drafting one of their two guys right now, you're going Mike Smith.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of team goalies, they're one of the least appealing tandems, but each guy has his individual appeal for sure. You look at Mike Smith, and nobody probably knows this besides you and I, that he leads all active NHL goalies in save percentage in the playoffs with .938 in his career. That's from last year. He played well in defeat for the Flames against the Avalanche, and then, of course, did some big things in the past with the Coyotes with little help around him. But, yeah, Koskinen was also – he has a good stat on his side. He was one of the best road goalies in the league this season, second in road save percentage behind Pavel Francouz. So that's really impressive for him, and that gives him a glimmer of hope for this format that will be played on a neutral site. And, yeah, you never know. I think Mikko Koskinen is probably a little more attractive than Mike Smith. I think I'm over Mike Smith at this point.
All right, I like that. We're kind of turning the page on Mike Smith. I mean, it's kind of about time, especially in fantasy. So I'll side with you on that. Now, I do want to just throw out this kind of general stat for goalies in the postseason. For me lately on this pause, I've been getting more into the history of things over like the past 10 years of hockey. Uh-huh. I just want to throw out the top five goalies and wins. I think this is interesting. Number one is Tuukka Rask, 50 wins in 89 games. Think about that, 50 wins in 89. Those are postseason games. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Second goalie, tied for second, two of them. Braden Holtby, 48 wins in 88 games. Corey Crawford, 48 wins in 86 games. So just to give you guys a scope here, we'll take it down a step further. Lundqvist is next, fourth on the list, and Marc-Andre Fleury also fourth, tied for fourth on the list with 47 mm-hmm. wins apiece. Now, they've played more games than the other guys mentioned, but just to let you guys know, don't be surprised if Hank starts in the postseason and gets some Ws. I mean, these guys are industry standard. Same thing with Corey Crawford. Don't be surprised, Pete, because we're not talking about the Chicago goaltending concerns right now because there isn't any. It's Corey Crawford. They don't have Robin Lehner there anymore. So that's their bona fide number one guy. And in the postseason, sometimes Crow just finds a way to win.
It's crazy that Tuukka Rask doesn't have a Stanley Cup title as a starter with those type of numbers. So maybe that's long overdue. I know he got really, really close last year, of course. But, yeah, Crawford I like more than Lundqvist for this postseason. That said, like, you really wonder if Lundqvist would – like, if he got a start, would that rally – you're going to look in this tournament for when it happens for different things that teams rally around because there's no fan support – in the building. So like, will a Lundqvist factor and a chance to get him deep in the playoffs? He's never won the cup before. Would that rally the Rangers if he gets the light of day and plays? I wouldn't be surprised when you really think about it. So I'm not drafting Lundqvist in a playoff pool, but don't be surprised if he shocks the world or something.
I think everyone is a little too quick to jump on the Shesterkin bandwagon and leave Lundqvist behind. You know, this is Lundqvist's, you know, potentially his last shot. If he gets on a little bit of a hot streak, you know, he's had some rest. I know he hasn't been great this year, but he's still Hank. And Shesterkin is a young kid, you know. So as Robbie said, don't be surprised if they throw Hank in net. He starts getting warmed up. Team starts rallying behind him. You know, the problem with that is the Rangers really played much better when Shesterkin was in net. I don't know how it's going to translate once this qualifying round gets underway. But Hank is still Hank, and if he gets warm, he's in between the pipes, they start rolling a bit, he's going to keep getting starts over the kid. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I could see it. It's going to be a great storyline, and you'd love to see it if he could get one last crack at this thing, especially with 1 year left on his contract, and you don't know if he'll be in a Rangers uniform if and when next season happens. Robbie, your neck of the woods is defenseman, so let's take a look at two guys. There's Jacob Chychrun and Sammy Vatanen. Both had a lot of success this regular season, but dealt with injury before the pause. Which guy do you like more, Carolina's Vatanen after the trade? He hasn't played a game for that team, or Jacob Chychrun?
It's Jacob Chychrun, and this one is easy for me. This is a player that can actually make a big impact in a postseason game, whether it's physicality, whether it's logging big minutes, or scoring a key goal. Don't be surprised to see his name on the score sheet. Sammy Vatanen is a phenomenal player, smooth skater, very talented, but you mentioned it. He did not play a game yet for that Hurricanes team. And I think the Hurricanes are just known for their brand of hockey being from defense first. It's just not going to work. It's going to be harder for it to work. And then you look at the Coyotes, OELP for the past three or four seasons now just hasn't been getting it done offensively. It's time for someone younger, for a bigger body to come in there and make the difference. So I'm going Chychrun all the way.
That makes sense. One of the appealing things about Vatanen after he was traded was that Dougie Hamilton was going to be out for a long while. And maybe if Vatanen came back from his injury, he would be on power play one. He had that spot. It was up for grabs at the time. Slavin was filling it. But now if Hamilton's coming back too, that's just another thing working against Vatanen. Besides the injury, besides being rusty in general, and besides not knowing the inner workings of Carolina's team on the ice, like if he starts a training camp, he's going to be learning everything firsthand for the first time. So that works against his chances. And Chychrun, you mentioned his goal scoring here and there. I mean, the guy missed time this year and had 12 goals as a defenseman, which is like top 10 in the league, right? So that's pretty awesome.
The last stat I want to throw out here is look at Arizona's opponent, though, in Nashville. I was looking at postseason points for forwards since 2016-17 to now, just to get a lay of the land. First of all, Yevgeny Kuznetsov and Ovi and Backstrom are up there. They're all up there. They're leading Crosby's 49 points. Then it's Kuzi, Ovi, Backstrom. Why is no one talking about Backstrom and Kuzi? We haven't mentioned their name a single time on any postseason podcast. Now, secondly, beyond that, though, going back to Nashville, Philip Forsberg, 34 points in 41 playoff games since 2016-17. The next player on Nashville, you don't have to scroll down very far, Ryan Johansson, 29 points in 33 postseason games. So I know that we've been kind of debating, can Nashville find their scoring touch? I think it's already there, and I think they're going to try harder in the postseason. I think they're going to raise their game. So it's not that I don't like Chychrun and the Coyotes. I just think too many people are sleeping on this Nashville team.
Yeah, that's a good thing when you look at guys like Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, all being close to a point per game in their playoff careers. Meanwhile, like, the Coyotes have a similar guy in Kessel, but not much help around him. They don't really have a great set. Right, their number one center this year was Christian Dvorak. So you're not bringing Phil Kessel back to his career standard all of a sudden. Those guys don't even play together to begin with. You know, Garland plays with Dvorak and Taylor Hall. So Kessel is like buried in the lineup a little bit this year. He has been so. Kind of a weird thing for Phil Kessel, and you know, we're a little sour on that player. And don't, like, Nashville has the center depth and the strong centers who have been productive in the playoffs before, so they have the capability of rising Granlund back from the depths, or rising Philip Forsberg to one of the top goal scorers in the league in the playoffs potentially.
And I was writing an X Factors article yesterday, Pete, and Connor Garland's on that list. I had to pull out a magician's hat to find a good stat for this Coyotes offense. The best one I could come up with was that Garland led the Coyotes with 22 goals in 68 games this season. I mean, that's it. Like, you can go behind the numbers. You can look under the table for the stats. That's all you're going to get.
Speaking of pulling out the magician hats, I just want to pat all of us on the back, specifically you guys who are churning out the content on NHL.com, you know, doing two podcasts a week. I mean, we are absolutely starving. If you are in the content development business right now in sports and what's going on, no games, I mean, I think people need to realize how difficult it is. And I'm just going to, you know, applaud you guys, appreciate it. The listeners should appreciate it. I mean, I'm dying. I'm starving. There's only so many guests I can get on and ask the same question over and over again. You guys with all the angles and the articles, you know, you're diving deep into e-gaming and e-sports. I mean, let's just pat ourselves on the back and let's understand what's happened since March. We've had zero games and we're in the content development business trying to churn out content. We are starving for games. So I'm just going to, again, we've pulled out the magician hat many, many times. I think let's just applaud ourselves and be proud of what we've done, because for the folks listening, it's not easy. It's not easy what's happening with us with no games. It's not easy.
No, it's true. We're making the best of a tough situation for sure. But yeah, back to the Coyotes. I mean, that stat you said about Connor Garland, that is embarrassing to players like Clayton Keller, Phil Kessel, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, even what we said about Chychrun, he's probably like their fourth or fifth leading goal scorer as a defenseman with 12, right?
And Kessel's a great player, but those stats and how many points he racked up in the postseason, you know, Pittsburgh power play, look at that, right? Like, and Kessel's a big threat on that power play. I remember, you know, watching the Pens in the postseason, and every time Kessel was teeing up one-timers, you're thinking this is going in every single time. It's not that that's the bad player. It's just that that offense, Pete, is not going to cater to high-scoring games. So you're going to have to rely heavily on either Darcy Kemper or Antti Raanta, whichever one captures the number one job there. I think it'll be Kemper. But, yeah, I just can't see myself in a postseason pool getting too jazzed when drafting a guy from Arizona.
You're right. And you think back to his time with Pittsburgh. Even if he was third-line first power play, that first power play did the bulk of the damage. He could play with Hagelin and Bonino or whoever he was playing with on the third line and keep the Penguins' depth afloat, and then he would be the guy who delivered on the power play with the one tees and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's something to think about with Kessel, just how his stats – before he was with the Penguins, like – he was always criticized for his big game performances or lack thereof. And then with the Maple Leafs, and then now, you know, you look at his bulky totals in the playoffs, it's as a result of that, he played with Crosby and Malkin on the power play for three postseasons. That's how you get those type of numbers.
So the last player I just wanted to bring up here before we wrap it is Jonathan Drouin of the Montreal Canadiens. I know, Pete, you asked me about, you know, is there any sleepers from the Habs? It took me a while to even think about that one. But if there is going to be one, it's going to be John Drouin. This player, again, go back to his draft year. He can produce right up there with anybody in the league. He just hasn't really found that consistent game. He looked like he was going to find it this season until he kind of broke his wrist or had a real bad ligament injury against the Capitals. I think it was in maybe December, early January. But Drouin, I think, would be the player, Pete, to answer that question, would be my sleeper from the Habs.
My finger was up to send a personal message to Davey Satriano, but before I do that, I'm going to chime in on Drouin. This guy has all the talent in the world. At some point, some production, some explosion should occur, right? I mean, he's a young, talented, he's got all the skills. He just has, you know, hasn't put it together. So waiting on that to happen, Robbie, and that's a good sleeper pick from my perspective.
Yeah, Drouin is like a guy who's always – like he's put up some good numbers in the past when he was in juniors. He played with MacKinnon. When he was with Tampa Bay, he was on the power play one and had 20-something power play points with Kucherov and Stamkos and those headman names. So now with Montreal, he has a chance. Like if he ever reaches his full potential, he'll be their best forward on the ice. Mm-hmm. And he will need to be their best forward for them to win that series, I think. The other guys – keep them treading water, keep them in games, give Price a chance to steal a game here or there. But to win 3 out of 5 against the Pittsburgh Penguins, you're going to need more. You're going to need Drouin to take that experience and overcome an injury-riddled season and finally, like, make it materialize on the big stage and be their best player on the forward group.
And he had 14 points in 17 playoff games with the Lightning a couple of seasons ago. So he's nice. No slouch in postseason games.
Okay, before you guys wrap, 11:43 a.m. Eastern time on a Friday, June 26th. just so everyone is aware, I put the request out for Davey Satriano to come on the program. I told him we're going to be talking sleepers. We're going to be talking goalies right up his alley. And you know what he decided to do on a Friday? He decided to pass up on the opportunity. He's somewhere on the beach right now, kicking back, probably drinking, and this is no pun intended, a Corona with a lime in it, enjoying his Friday while we're here sweating, doing what we have to do on Zoom with bad internet connection and the whole bit. David Satriano is on the beach somewhere enjoying a cocktail. So I just want the listeners to understand this. I want everyone to understand this. Petey, Rob, Bob Bender, here with you on a Friday, a summer Friday. Davey Satriano, nowhere to be found. Won't respond to a text message. Won't get at me on Slack. So he's on the beach somewhere. And we talk goalie sleepers and nothing from Davey. So, Davey, I hope you're enjoying yourself.
That's actually the first I've heard of summer Fridays this year. I don't know if things are going to be different this time around. It's going to be a different summer, but I have a feeling actually Davey's probably in the office working on some, some column or something like that, or some. I don't know that he's on the beach right now. We'll give him that benefit of the doubt.
I guarantee you he's on the beach somewhere in Long Island, and he's wearing a New Jersey Devils jersey, and he's trying to figure out who the next head coach is going to be. That's what he's got his little notepad out, trying to, you know, put together a tree to see who the next coach is going to be with his Martin Brodeur jersey on. That's where Davey is, on the beach, again, with a beer, a cocktail in his hand, enjoying himself.
And Davey does deserve it. The guy's money every time he's on the show. So we'll at least tip our cap there. Davey, enjoy your little beach day today. Enjoy the Brodeur jersey and everything you got going on. But catch us on Twitter. I'm at NHL Reese. Pete's at NHL Jensen. Bob's at Airchecked, and Davey, I think, is at David Satriano, so you can ask him how his beach day was.
Yeah, Davey, you know, we love you. I'm just teasing with you. You come on all the time. You do a great job. Would have loved to have you on today, but I understand everyone needs a beach day once in a while. Everyone needs one. So, Davey, you know, take a joke. Don't get too crazy on me. I'm just teasing. We love you. Take care, everyone. And, Petey, why don't you lock us out?
Sounds good. I'm also looking forward to the draft lottery tonight. NBCSN, NHL Network. Next show, we'll be able to talk about where these guys might be going. So excited about that. So again, for Bender, Reese, Pete Jensen, have a great weekend. Stay safe out there. We'll talk to you again next time. NHL Fantasy on Ice.